Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. I'm Rachel Isaacs, a Pardes student from Manalapan, New Jersey, and the engineer for this program. We look forward to learning some Torah with you today. Thank you for tuning in. Today we are joined by Rabbi Meir Schweiger, who is the Mashgiach Ruchani, spiritual guide at Pardes. He will be teaching us about Toldot. A couple brief announcements, and then we'll turn it over to Rabbi Meir Schweiger. Your participation and feedback is vital for the success of the podcast series. Please send us comments on the episode, where you live, and how you heard about us. Send your email to podcast@pardesusa.org. Thank you. That's it. And now, Rabbi Schweiger.
Thank you, Rachel. It's a beautiful day in Jerusalem today. Our parsha is Parshat Toldot. And I'd like to speak today about the personality of Isaac, of Yitzchak. And perhaps the title of my talk is Yitzchak, low-key, but spectacular. Our parsha starts out by saying, Ele Toldot Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham holid et Yitzchak. The word toldot means progeny, offspring. And in fact, the next few verses discuss the whole process of how Yitzchak has two twins, two boys, Jacob and Esau. But in fact, toldot seems to be a more comprehensive term, which has to do not only with your offspring, but with your life events. So that, in fact, our parsha is really talking about the life story of Yitzchak. And although we've seen in previous parshiyot about the birth of Yitzchak, about the binding of Yitzchak, our parsha is giving us an insight into who this person really is. When it says, Eile toldot Yitzchak ben Avraham, it's emphasizing Yitzchak is the son of Avraham, and it says a second time, Avraham holid et Yitzchak. The Torah wants to highlight that Yitzchak is really the offspring of Avraham, not only physically, but spiritually. He is perpetuating the life work of Avraham. His life, in many ways, seems a replay of the life of Avraham. And what I would like to examine today are a number of events that happened in the life of Yitzchak, which parallel the life of Avraham and yet have their own spin, where Yitzchak, on the one hand, is continuing the legacy of Avraham, and on the other hand, is carving out his own niche. The first thing which we're told about in the parsha is Yitzchak's marriage. It recaps. Yitzchak is 40 years old when he gets married. He gets married to Rivka, who is the daughter of Betuel, the sister of Lavan. And we have a pasuk, which is very, very important for us, which says, and this is chapter 25, sentence 21. Vayetar Yitzchak Ladonai lenochach ishto ki akarahi, vayetar lo Adonai, vatahar Rivka ishto. Yitzchak prays to God opposite his wife, for she is barren. And God responds to his prayer, and Rivka, his wife, becomes pregnant. Abraham's wife, Sarah, is barren. In fact, the first information we have about Abraham is his marriage to Sarah, Sarai at that point, and how she is a barren woman. Isaac also marries a barren woman. In fact, it seems that the patriarchs have a track record of marrying barren women, because Jacob also marries two barren women, Rachel and Leah. What makes Yitzchak's situation unique is that we're told that Yitzchak prays for his wife and that God responds to his prayer. It would be reasonable to assume that all of the patriarchs prayed to God to have a child. And I would also add that the matriarchs as well prayed to have a child. And yet, the reason why the Torah singles this out is not so much the fact that they prayed, but perhaps the fact that they got a that Yitzhak got a response, that God responds to his prayer, and Rivka becomes pregnant. How long did Yitzhak pray? There's no way that we can gauge that exactly. He gets married when he's 40. His children are born when he's 60. It's reasonable to assume that he didn't pray necessarily at the beginning, or maybe he did. But certainly I would venture to speculate after 5 years, 10 years, that Yitzhak is certainly beginning to pray. But my point is that it may have taken a very, very long time for his prayers to be answered. The word vayetar is a very special language of prayer. And it would seem to be that it's a language of petitioning, pleading. And perhaps I would like to add another word, which I think is very important, a language of persistence. And perhaps this is something which characterizes the power of prayer that Yitzhak has. Avraham prays to God on behalf of Sodom. It's an earth-shattering type of prayer. He's challenging. He has many different angles from which he approaches God. It's very lengthy. He's arguing back and forth. And at each point, God agrees to his prayer, agrees to, accedes to his petition. But praying on behalf of Sodom is a one-time act. Yitzchak's prayer is much more mundane. He's praying for a child. It's an act of prayer which he does day in, day out, perhaps a few times a day. It's the type of prayer which he does regularly, consistently, that he will continue to do until God will grant him what he wants. And he succeeds. His grandeur is in his persistence. When we read on in the parsha, we're told there's a famine in the land. Besides the original famine in the days of Abraham, and Yitzchak goes to the land of the Philistines, at which point God appears to him and says, "Do not go down to Egypt." And it would make a lot of sense for Yitzchak to go down to Egypt because, as I said, deja vu. When his father experienced the famine, he goes to Egypt. Egypt is the breadbasket of the world. So if Yitzchak wants to be able to survive, the logical place to go is Egypt. Why go through the land of the Philistines? Because we see later on in the book of Shemot that the land of Philistines is the shortest route to go to Egypt. And when he's perhaps about to move from the land of Philistines to Egypt, God tells him, "Don't leave." Why? Why can't Yitzchak leave and go to the land of Egypt? Rashi quotes a midrash that says, well, Yitzchak has a special status because he was offered up as a burnt offering. And as a result of that, in the story of the Akedah, as a result of that, he's holy. And his holiness is expressed by being forbidden to leave the land of Israel. It would seem to be that there may be another way of looking at it, which is that Yitzchak's whole life is wrapped up with the land of Israel. He's born, he's bred. His whole life's work and vision, and eventually his death, are in the land of Israel. There's a certain logic to it that if Yitzchak is Abraham's child, And if Abraham's life is very much connected to the land of Israel, the promise revolves around the land of Israel, that his son should be someone who develops that connection in the most emphatic way by never leaving the land of Israel. In many ways, Yitzchak is what we would call the quintessential Israeli. He's a Sabra. And this theme is carried through in the continuation of chapter 26. In chapter 26, sentence 12, we're told, Vayizra Yitzchak ba'aretz ahi, Yitzchak plants in that land, Vayimtza ba'shana ahi, and he finds in that year, Me'ash she'arim, which I will translate as 100 measures, Vayivarcheu Hashem, and God blessed him. Of all the patriarchs, Yitzchak is the only one who's involved in agriculture. Avraham is somebody who is a herdsman. He has cattle, he has sheep. Jacob is a shepherd, but Yitzchak is a farmer, and a remarkable farmer, because we're told that even though the land in which he is a very arid land, which is not that fertile, and even though the year in which he's planting is a year of famine, he is able to produce 100-fold. And the explanation is offered, how is that possible? Vayivarcheu Hashem, because God blessed him. Yitzchak's base in the land of Israel is this area of the Negev. Yitzchak's capital is Be'er Sheva, and we'll discuss this in a few moments. And the reason for this is because Yitzchak's vision and Yitzchak's life's work is to be able to now bring the blessing of God to the world. To plant, to take a desert and make it into a Garden of Eden. Yitzchak is a turning point. In the early stories of Bereshit, we find that when people sin, God curses the land. After Adam eats of the tree of knowledge, God says that by the sweat of your brow you will eat bread. There will be thorns and thistles that will grow. After Cain kills Abel, God says the land will no longer produce its full bounty to you. But with Isaac, the land produces 100-fold. And this is a certain vision that somehow our relationship with God is reflected through the land. Working the land is a value. There's a value of now taking God's creation and becoming a partner with God in creation, taking a desert and making it bloom. If one looks back at last week's parsha, in chapter 24, sentence 63, in sentence 63, Yitzchak is described as living in the area of the Negev. And then in sentence 64, it says, Vayetze Yitzchak lasuach basadeh lifnot arev. Yitzchak goes out to meditate in the field towards evening. And the rabbis understood that the word lasuach, to meditate, is an expression of prayer based on Psalms. And in fact, the rabbis even say that Yitzchak instituted the afternoon prayer, the mincha. So that Yitzchak is in the field planting and praying. Yitzchak is the one who's able to integrate work, working the land, and service of God. For Yitzchak, the land is where he's able to have the interface between the mundane and the holy. That is Yitzchak's greatness, to be able to create that integration. So that you're not living in dichotomous realms, but you're able to bring together your material and spiritual lives and see how they complement each other. Prayer for Yitzchak is not in the Beit Knesset. Prayer is out in the fields. And there's a very good reason for that, because he gets the feedback out in the fields. And I'd even add that when the rabbi said that Yitzchak instituted mincha, mincha is the prayer that I say in the middle of my day. We normally would assume that in the middle of the day, a person is in their profession, is at their work. And yet Yitzchak is able to integrate prayer in the framework of his work. So that it's not, I work at this point and I pray at another point, but somehow the work is an organic part, the prayer, is an organic part of his work. Yitzchak is not only a farmer, but as we go on to read, Yitzchak's perhaps niche is in terms of digging wells. Abraham digs wells, and Yitzchak digs wells. Abraham builds altars, calls out in the name of God. Yitzchak also builds altars and calls out in the name of God. But building altars and calling out in the name of God through that is Abraham's calling in life. For Yitzchak, it's digging wells. And so in the continuation of chapter 26, we're told of a very interesting story. Yitzchak, when he plants and produces a hundredfold, that's just the beginning of his career. And in the next verse, we're told about how he is growing. Three words of growing, which describe this meteoric rise in terms of his wealth, and in terms of, one could say, his status, his power. All of that is the result of Yitzchak's hard labor and his prayers. And the response of his surroundings is jealousy. It says the Philistines are jealous of Yitzchak. And then the expression of their jealousy is to go and stuff up those wells that Abraham had dug. It's a classic example of someone who cuts off their nose to spite their face. Because the wells that Abraham dug service everybody. But if the Philistines want to hurt Yitzchak, the way to hurt him is to destroy the memory of his father, to destroy the legacy of his father. But the Plishtim don't stop there. The king Avimelech comes to Yitzchak and says, get away from us, because you have become too powerful either for our liking, or another way of translating it, from us, by exploiting us. So that Yitzchak is now faced with expulsion. And what is his reaction? Yitzchak does what I call a tactical retreat. He does not run away. He does not confront the king and engage in hostilities. What he does is to move so that he's not in Avimelech's face, but he doesn't abandon his vision. And after moving so that he's a little bit away, he goes back in sentence 18, and it says he returns and he redigs the wells of his father, because he's not going to allow Avimelech and the people of Plishtim to erase his father's legacy. But then, in the next few sentences, we're told, he doesn't suffice with that. He then digs his own wells. And the first well that he digs results in a dispute. And they call the place Asek, which could be understood as engagement, contention, but what I would say, low-grade contention. But then his servants go and they dig another well. And this time, it's no longer low-grade. The place is called Sitna, related to the word Satan, which means adversarial. Enmity, which means that Yitzchak, it would seem, has put himself on a path of collision, where it's inevitable that this is going to lead to a full-scale confrontation. And yet, nevertheless, in sentence 22, we're told a third time, he moves, and he digs another well, and this time there's no longer a fight. And they call the well Rechovot, which means breadth. And he says, because now there's enough room for all of us to flourish in the land. What you find happening with Yitzchak is that the same quality of persistence which he has in prayer, which enables him in the end to get a response so that his wife becomes pregnant with twins, that same persistence he exhibits in digging wells. In a low-key manner, in a way which is not confrontative, but he will continue digging wells because it's a matter of principle. Because digging wells is what brings life to an area which is desolate. Because digging wells is how he is able to now further the creation which God has made. Because Yitzchak is interesting in bringing blessing, not just to himself, but to the world at large. And he will continue digging wells until the people around him acknowledge that. And when he gets to Rechovot, he reaches a modus vivendi with his surroundings. But it doesn't end there. Avimelech then comes to Yitzchak together with his chief of staff, and he says to him, I see that God is with you, and he uses the name of God, Hashem. And he concludes and says, and you are the blessed of Hashem, which means that Yitzchak's persistence brings these people to this recognition of his relationship with God, that everything that he's doing is an expression of that relationship. And then we find a very interesting sequel. They sit down, they eat, they drink, they have a party. They make a pact. It says they swear a man to his brother. There's a sense of brotherhood here. And then it says, and Yitzchak sends them away, and they go away from him in peace. If you look at the parallel story in chapter 21, Avimelech, and it would seem to be that it's not the same person, but perhaps his father, but certainly the previous king, also comes to Abraham and says God is with him and makes a pact with Abraham. But in that pact, there's no eating, there's no drinking, there's no expression of brotherhood. The pact is a formal agreement. And in fact, Abraham then brings up an issue, a thorny issue, that Avimelech's servants have stolen his well. And Avimelech immediately denies it, and Abraham says, okay, but I want you to acknowledge this is my well, so I'm giving you 7 sheep. Take it. And Avimelech does. And it would seem to be that when Avimelech takes the sheep, they have now made a contractual agreement that acknowledges this well belongs to Abraham. And yet that agreement did not stop the next generation from stuffing up that well. Yes, Abraham reached a certain agreement with his surroundings, but it was a piece of paper. And it wasn't worth much more than that because it's violated immediately afterwards. Yitzchak reaches what we would call, in modern terms, normalization. He's able to eat and drink. He's able to call the other person his brother, and he's able to send him away in peace. And perhaps the most significant expression of what we would call a real peace is that the next day, and this is in sentence 32, Yitzchak is able to dig another well, and there are no fights. Which means that what began as an issue of contention, digging wells,
what is seen as perhaps as an act of aggression, as a snubbing by Avimelech and the Plishtim, in the end becomes an act of blessing, which everybody can benefit from. Yitzchak, through his persistence, is able to get that recognition by Avimelech and the Philistines that he is the one who is blessed by God. And through that, he is able to live with them in peace and to be able to bring blessing not only to himself, but to the world at large. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Please tell your friends about this podcast series, and please let us know your thoughts and comments. Send us email via podcast@pardesusa.org. Thanks to Dr. David Bernstein, the executive producer of Pardes from Jerusalem podcast series. Shalom and goodbye from Jerusalem.